this is the Infinite Energy Show, where together we explore the infinite dimensions of energy. We're sisters Kay and Shai, seasoned restaurateurs, university educators, and the visionary co-founders of the Neuroencoding Institute. We're not just sisters by blood, but your allies in personal growth and transformation. Here's what we know about you. You want more energy. How do we know? Because everybody does, including the most successful people in the world. So let's get to it, because in the world of infinite energy, anything is possible. The energy of family. On today's Infinite Energy episode, we're putting the energy of family in the middle and taking a look.
You know how we like to do here. We take a subject every month, we throw it in the middle, and then we check out every angle around that subject that we can. And today, it's all about family.
Now, it's no secret that we are real life sisters, which means we have a fair amount when it comes to experience with family. So from heartfelt stories to teachings you aren't gonna wanna miss, stay tuned for today's episode of the Infinite Energy Show.
The energy of family. Now, as we mentioned, we're sisters, so we have a fair amount of experience with family, but so do you. In fact, so do we all, because family is one of the things that everyone has in common.
In fact, there are even common language phrases around family that so many of us understand and know deeply. Things like blood is thicker than water, put your family first, we're better when we stick together. There's this idea that when we come together in small units, we can be stronger.
It takes a village, right? We've heard all of these things before. My husband, Chad, always says, family above all, and that's something that he lives by. But maybe for you, family isn't necessarily a happy word. We know that 1 in 7 kids here in the U.S. grows up in an abusive home, which means not everybody has a happy, positive connotation when it comes to family.
So today we're going to be discussing familial energy in a more holistic sense, talking a little bit about the family that maybe you choose, the family you find in your workplace, the family we find in our local communities, and more.
Families affect us internally, families affect us externally, families affect our life chances, how we lean politically, and so much more. So stay tuned, we're gonna dive into it all next.
So let's talk a little bit more about what family means, how it's evolved over time, and some of the history around the very idea of family.
Now, I love talking about family and this as an entity. In my sociology class, we spend a whole day talking about the institution of family because truly, it's the one institution in our society that all of us have experience with. Whether it's good or bad, we all have some experience with family, family members, or them not being there. But either way, we have experience with this institution. Now, historically speaking, for our species, families were, again, that first unit of grouping an organization that we did as a species and as a race. And then as our society grew, more and more things changed about the family. If we think about historically, families used to include under one roof all of the extended family and much of the generations all under one roof. Here in the U.S. in particular, that changed around the 1950s or so with the concept of the nuclear family, where the mom, dad, and children, the nucleus, hence nuclear, became the only ones expected to live under the household or under one roof while the extended family lived in other housing. And so the interesting way that family has progressed through this and through a ton of other things is fascinating to observe.
Now, as history moves forward, we see the family even shifting and evolving to now have this idea that your family can include people you choose, like friends. It can include your pets, even animals. It can include people that you work with. And the family looks different for different people, right? There are two-parent households, single-parent households, adoptive parents that happen when they have kids. Some families are two people who come together in relationship who choose not to have children. And so the ways that families can look vary, and there is no one family that does it the right or wrong way.
When we think about families from this unit perspective, we realize that the function the family fulfills has always been primarily to bear and raise the children. As a species, we have to have that in order to continue and go on. But what's changed is that the expectation of the family as modernization and technology has advanced has really shifted quite a bit. You think about 100, 200 years ago, your goal was to bear and raise the children. You raise them as many adults as quickly as they could to begin contributing back to the family. But as we see, many of the things that the family used to fulfill are now outsourced, right? We have a dishwasher that washes all the dishes. We're able to go out to eat, and much of our food comes prepared. We no longer sew and make the clothes, we purchase the clothes. They used to educate kids at home until it became essential for our society to educate kids outside of the home. And so the education has been outsourced. Much of the cleaning has been outsourced. Much of the cooking and preparation has been outsourced. And so the family objective of just get kids to adulthood so they can contribute has changed and actually made it harder for parents, because now the outcome is much more murky. It's not just get kids to adulthood. Only half of kids survived past the age of 5 200 years ago. So the goal has changed from that to raising happy, healthy, productive citizens of the world. And that's a lot harder to measure.
It turns out that there's not really a book telling you exactly how to function with your family, how to raise a family. There isn't an instruction manual that comes along with any of this. Many of us are left figuring it out along the way. In fact, the term parenting didn't even come into popular context until the 1970s. And so the idea that parenting is more than just being a parent is a relatively new concept. And so, well, as we've mentioned, we're going to talk about the extension of family today. We're going to talk about your community family, your global family, yes, the family within your four walls, and so much more. Stay tuned for more here on the show.
All right, the energy of family. Kay, you mentioned that parenting as a verb didn't come into popular style until the 1970s. It's just so mouth-dropping interesting to me, right? The noun, the word parent, the role has been around for thousands of years, but the verb of parenting has only been around for a few decades. That's pretty monumental for our species.
But here's the thing. Even if you're just a parent, or if you're parenting, when you're bringing kids up or being brought up by others, you are socially influencing one another. What do we know about energy on a physical level? That when molecules come together, when mass comes together with mass, that those molecules have exchange. It's the same thing that happens with the energies that emit from our bodies through our emotions, through our ideas, through our opinions. And we exchange our opinions, our ideas, our emotions, and we end up socializing those around us, which your primary agent of socialization is your family.
That's not just anecdotal, right? There's all whole body of social science research demonstrating this fact. In fact, the number one agent of socialization, as we call it in the social sciences, are your parents. In fact, 90% of people share the same political party affiliation as their parents. Most people live within a 30-mile radius of their parents. Most people will attend college where their parents went. Your parents have a massive influence on you. And if you're thinking to yourself, that's not me, I don't share any of those things with my parents, well, guess what? They influenced you not to be like them. So they are, your family entity is massively influential for your socialization and your life chances going forward.
And look, new studies have come out that demonstrate that your generations of family also affect you on a DNA level. Generational trauma is a real thing, which means if one generation or two generations ago, somebody went through something really horrible, that trauma can be stuck up in their DNA and it could be actively affecting you. So from socialization to your physical appearance, your family really matters when it comes to figuring out how to navigate your future. We're not saying that you're stuck like this or that your family determines who you are or who you become, but they have a huge role, and understanding this allows you to use this energy in a way that benefits you.
That's exactly right, Kay. Just understanding this allows you to play the game of life at a different level. And that's what we always hope to help you do, is to pick up your feet from around whatever subject it is and move around that subject. Look at all the different angles, examine them and consider so that you can make the best choices for yourself from an empowered, knowledgeable state, not from an emotional, reactive state. Everything from your rituals to your traditions to your affiliations, as we've talked about, come from or at least start with your family. And so we love that we're getting to examine this subject today with you.
Now, we talked a little bit more conceptually in this first segment about what is family, how we define it, the history of family, but coming up, we're going to go through our direct experiences as family members and with playing the family roles that we have experienced firsthand. We hope you stay tuned and enjoy.
Should I go get the dirty laundry basket?
Oh, it's already, the skeletons are in the closet. We'll bring them out. Got that laundry here for y'all.
Okay, so of course we're joking. And of course we have stories that are dirty laundry just like everyone else, because that's the nature of family. You don't live in close quarters with other people. Grow and experience, shared experience, the light, the squeezes of life getting you without a little dirty laundry coming along the way.
Speaking of close quarters, Shai, I mean, we've been in like just about the closest of quarters that there are. So our first segment here, we're talking about the energy of siblings.
Now, you may know us as Kay and Shai, the sister duo, and you might think, gosh, I wish that my kids would be like that, and I wish I had that kind of relationship with my siblings, and here's the dirty laundry for you. We did not like each other for our childhood, leading up until Kay was graduating high school, when things finally started to become more neutral, and then not even until she was in her early 20s, where our friendship began to grow, and now we're inseparable, we're siblings, we're best friends, we're business partners, we like to say we're twins in spirit. But don't worry, we definitely did not always act this way or feel this way about each other.
Now, we were born 7 years apart. If you consider everything that can happen to an individual in 7 years, there's so much that goes on. Now, not necessarily with the siblings, and yes, with the siblings, but I want you to just consider for a moment the difference of our parents. If you think about the difference that you had, maybe if you're listening to this and you're younger, think about how much you grew between the age of 10 and 17. Think about how much you grew if maybe you're older, between the ages of 24 and 31. Now, that's exactly where our parents were when we were born. And so the 24-year-olds had Shai and the 31-year-olds had me. And so we had essentially a different level of parenting experience because of this gap.
This gap for us proved to be not only in terms of our parents' age, but in terms of our family's economic status as well. In fact, I give a TEDx University of Nevada, Reno talk where I demonstrate the fact that when I was born, our parents were on food stamps and welfare, having garage sales to make the rent, skipping music lessons because we couldn't afford the instrument. And as our family was able to literally bootstrap themselves out of that economic environment, Kay was coming up and being raised in a different way. And so that caused some differences between her and I early on, not to mention the age gap, because what do a 7 and a 14-year-old have to relate to? Not a whole ton. So it was definitely a struggle for us. And I definitely have the older sister energy, vibe, syndrome, if you will, that so many others have out there as well. Older siblings unite. You all know this struggle of often being looped in with the parenting side of things when it comes. And it's been something that we've had to work on. In fact, we had a coach tell us a few years ago that was really helpful for me as the older sibling. Look, do you want to be a parent or do you want to be a partner? And ultimately, I know I want to be a partner.
Well, here was an interesting revelation. Shiloh was regaling me of a tale of when we were younger. And she goes, yeah, don't you remember when I was your teacher? And I was like, wiggity, what? Like, you were my teacher? And she said, yes, over a summer break when I was 10 and you were 3, mom had me babysit you. And every day I was the teacher in charge of making you do workbooks. Now, many of you know how resilient a 3-year-old can be on their ideas and how much they don't want to participate in boring activities like workbooks. And we also know how much a 10-year-old is striving to try and be a big kid, to prove themselves to mom and dad. And we start to see that older sibling, younger sibling dynamic come into play. It took us a long time to figure out how to be friends when we were still shaking off those trails of us being that 10 and 3, 10 and 17, the 9 and 16, I can do this. But it took us time to get out of those patterns. And that's the thing that happens with a family, right? Especially when there's kids involved with siblings, you have the same experience from completely different cognitive perspectives.
Look, if you're lucky enough to have a sibling, there is no one else in the world more related to you from a DNA perspective. And if you happen to be women and you have sisters, then sisters happen to be even more genetically related than sisters and brothers or brothers and brothers. So if you're a sister to a sister, there is no one closer to you or more like you than your sister. And so it does you well to make good with your siblings in your adulthood and to form bonds with them, especially as if your parents age, there becomes the question of care around them and elderly care, which we'll talk about in a little bit when we get into parents. But ultimately, we want to remind you that if you're lucky enough to have siblings, there's no one else around you that understands your parents like they do and is more genetically related to you. So it's worth trying to salvage those relationships if you can.
But making peace with your siblings, finding ways to get along can be difficult. And the number one way to do this in any difficult relationship is to move forward on tough conversations. Look, if you have something to say, your sisters are here to encourage you to just say it. If you're going through something hard with a sibling of yours, we want to encourage you to open the door, to send the letter, to shoot them a text, to give an opportunity for conversation to flow, even if things are painful, even if it hurts. It is a relationship that's worth reconciling. And maybe it's not in your life or your particular instance, but if any of this is striking a chord in you, we're big fans of siblings. We would promote you to be a part of it. And we look forward to unpacking more family dynamics in the rest of the show.
We'll go get more laundry. Okay, here we go. A little. Do you want to borrow it or just steal it out of my room like you used to?
Oh, that laundry's dirty, girl. I don't want anything to do with that.
All right, get out of here, dirty laundry, and get in here, the subject of parenting, because what's dirtier than dishing everything about your parents?
About your parents, about us being parents. This is the section around parenting, and we find ourselves in a unique, not so unique circumstance right now where we both are parents and have parents.
Now, many of you are likely similar to us, where you both have kids and you still have living parents. Hopefully you're lucky that you're like us, that your parents are still living. If they've already passed, our condolences to you. We hope that that was, that you're filled with memories that give you solace in your times of grief with your parents passing. But for us, we're in this phase of life where we have young children, ages 2 to 13. That's our age ranges between the two of us. There's 5 kids. And then we also have our parents, age ranges 61 to 66. So they are still on the younger side for as far as parents go. But we experienced something earlier this year that definitely gave us a taste of what many in the U.S. especially are experiencing.
Earlier this year, our father fell and unfortunately broke his hip. It was a really difficult fall, and many of you have likely also experienced your parents going into some form of injury. It was a scary situation for all of us. Our dad is elderly. He is in his late 60s. And to suffer a broken hip can be something that not only hurts somebody physically, but hurts them emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And so naturally, as a family, we rallied around our father to be with him as he was recovering. But it really brought us into perspective. And as we had to take this pause and moment where for the first time in our lives, we were caring for both our parents and our children.
It was a whole new world for us and a new experience. And you've got to understand, our parents are incredibly active. Our maiden name is Young, and they take that to heart because they are young at heart. They're very active. They're very healthy. And so thank goodness, even here just 9 weeks after Dad's hip break, he's already walking, unloading trucks out there, busting moves and doing chores. He's vacuuming again and unloading the dishwasher. Our dad's a very active fellow, both athletically and within the household. So it's good to see him coming back. But those first few weeks were definitely difficult. And many other folks out there have to deal with this as well, caring for elderly parents. So being the parent where you both have kids and you have parents, or being the grandparent where you have kids that have kids, as our mom has shared with us, is complicated. It's hard because ultimately, and let's shift from talking about parenting our parents to parenting our kids, parenting kids is so hard. OMG. It is so hard.
Parenting kids is probably one of the biggest challenges that either of us have ever faced, hands down. Raising other humans is hard. They are complex, beautiful, emotional, loving beings. It's fulfilling, yes, and it's one of the hardest jobs on the planet for a reason. Now, we're not here to give you all of the best parenting advice under the sun because frankly, we can't give it. Would highly recommend that you follow Dr. Becky on Instagram. Just go look her up, Dr. Becky Good Inside, to get some help if you are looking for more advice around parenting. But as Shyla said, we have a vast age range of kids. My son is 2, my daughter is 6, Shyla has a daughter who's 10, and then 2 13-year-olds, a boy and a girl, who are both twins. And so there are a few things that we've learned along the way that seem to work well with the whole gambit of their age range.
just a handful of those things that we can tell you now. One is that do your best to give your kids choices, even if they're fabricated choices, right? You tell them, which shirt do you want to wear today? This one or this one? Hey, what should we have for dinner? The spaghetti with salad or the lasagna with mixed vegetables, right? And allowing them to have a little bit of that choice helps so much. Another thing is to remember that each kid is their own individual. And look, we're telling you all of this to remind ourselves of this as well, because it's so easy to want to shift and revert back into, look, I am the one in charge. I've got a million things to get done. Just do what you're told to do, which isn't necessarily achieving what we talked about earlier, which is raising happy, healthy, contributing citizens of the world.
So one of the things that we've learned that can be really helpful for a parent is understanding that your kid is going to make mistakes. You likely have this cognitive understanding of like, yeah, my kid is going to mess up. But here's the cool thing about making mistakes when you're young. The price of mistakes is lower when you're younger, and it goes up as they get older. And so the more mistakes, the more messy we can allow them to be, the more times they fall off the monkey bars when they're 2, the less they'll fall off the monkey bars when they're 5. They won't fall off the monkey bars when they're 13, when it's an arm break situation, right? And so we're allowing kids to make mistakes and then able to set them up for situations where they're going to have to go forward and fail. And then here's the challenging part, not saving them from the failure. As a parent, we want to raise these healthy, happy human beings, and keeping a kid happy in the moment is oftentimes what feels better for our own hearts. But allowing them to sit with their own pain, learn to deal with their emotions, and learn their lessons on their own helps them to grow and experience what it's like to, frankly, be an adult, because humaning is really freaking tough.
We would counsel all parents out there to definitely give themselves a little grace. And while they're giving themselves some grace, to maybe have a conversation with their kids, no matter what age they are, and remind them that 2 things. One, you as the parent are just a human, and humans make mistakes, and humans don't know all the answers. And so often they come to you with 8 million questions. Trust me, 8 million
so many questions.
Yeah.
In fact, I wish we could go get the dirty laundry again. I'm going to air a little out.
Please.
There are times where Shyla on like trips and things will be like, I have a 2-hour question embargo, no questions for like, and I just need an hour with no questions. And someone will come to her with a question. She'll be like, nope, not answering your question.
It's a lot, right? To be the decision maker all the time, which makes you the authority all the time, which then makes you seem like you can never make a mistake either to yourself or to your kids. So reminding your kids, hey, this is my first go around on this planet too. This is my first time being a parent, and humans make mistakes, will help them understand you on a more human level. The second thing I wanted to remind you of is that when you are maybe at odds with your kids, especially as they get into teenage years, boy, last night there was a little homework battle at the Morris household, right? Just get out some more dirty laundry. And we had some, well, look, you've got to finish this report. And he's slamming around. He's just, mom, like, how could you do this? And I reminded him of something that has been in our tool belt for a long time. Look, I'm Team Wesley. I'm on your team. I understand that you don't like what I'm telling you, but I'm telling you to help you, or I'm holding you to a standard to help you. So reminding kids that you're on their team is often a really good strategy that can help diffuse any situation.
We hope that these little tiny tips and tricks and a little bit of airing of our own laundry to tell you that no one is perfect, least especially us when it comes to parenting, can give you some hope. If you don't already have kids, or if you're not planning on having kids, maybe it just helps you find a little bit more grace for the humans that raise you. Stay tuned for more here on the show. Okay, another round of dirty laundry here. As we talk about the family of partnerships.
Woo, partnerships. And we're talking the romantic kind, because every family unit starts with a partnership or a romantic relationship. And so that's where we want to dive in now.
Now, many of you are in romantic partnerships, or you desire romantic partnerships. And we are, again, not here to tell you that we are the experts, simply to share some of our experience as to what's worked, what hasn't, and hopefully encourage you along the way.
Right. First, I'll share in my own partnership, coming up on 18 years happily married. I know I don't look old enough for that. Thank you. Thank you. Stop. Okay, they stopped. 18 years of marriage with my husband, Chad. There's been ups, there's been downs, there's been plateaus, there's been peaks, there's been all of those quintessential things that people talk about. But in the partnership, it's very interesting for you as a couple. When you have your first kid, you realize now we're a family and you start to grow from there and it expands from there. And then after you have one kid, then you have the second kid, and now you have kids, plural. Now, if you're like my husband and I, we had twins, so we went from couple to kids all in one pregnancy. But I'm here to tell you that a long-lasting marriage, if you're lucky enough to pick the right partner in the beginning, is not easy.
You know, not all of us are lucky enough to pick the right partner. That happens. And definitely, I'm the one who held the laundry at this front. That happened in my situation, as many of you have followed along on our journey. I'm grateful that my co-parent is now my friend and somebody that I can get along with. But ultimately, I picked a partner that held and carried a deep-seated secret. And 10 years into our relationship, they came out as transgender. Now, ultimately, my dear Danny's transition from he into she was something that ended our marriage. Now, I've carried love and compassion for Danny in this, but now I'm out here navigating the waters of new romantic partnership.
How's that going?
You know, it's a ride.
It is a ride.
It's a ride.
Well, we all support you and love you, and it's been amazing to watch Kay go through this journey. If you followed along, you know the incredible amount of grace and authenticity she's brought forward in this. But there are so many who go through divorces and go through splits and partnerships, and hopefully you don't allow it to chip away at your self-worth. It's not an easy choice to make, and people grow. Who you are at 20, as we just talked about, is not the same as who you are at 30 or 40, and so finding the right lifetime partner can be a major challenge. And so that's about all we want to tell you in terms of relationships and romantic partnerships, but they are the essential building block of a family.
They can be wonderful. It's okay to choose wrong, and remember, tough conversations are always worth having.
Next, let's look at a little bit outside of that nuclear family unit and beyond into our extended family, our chosen family, our work families, and more.
Now, when we look at extended family, this could include your aunts and your uncles, your cousins and your second cousins, your chosen family, your pets, and so much more. And here's the thing about extended family takes a lot of choice. Extended family are people that you either choose to let in consistently or choose to keep out for whatever reason.
Now, based on your culture, you might be already very integrated with your extended family or very alienated from your extended family. And maybe with culture has nothing to do with it, you could be either of those things as well. Every family is different. But for us, we know we grew up with our dad is one of five, our mom is one of seven. And so there was a lot of extended family in and around all of the time. And it was something that we really enjoyed and appreciated as kids. Now, as we've gotten older, some of those relationships are no longer current. They're no longer active. Some just by natural decay, some by big blowouts. Oh, we didn't get the laundry.
Oh, should have been airing it out.
Well, regardless, we won't air out that laundry with you, but we'll tell you, if you've got some complicated relationships in your extended family, it's okay. It happens to a lot of people. And if you have extended family members that were major parts of your life as a kid, as you become an adult, it's important for you to then reciprocate that relationship back. If you have the aunt that always handed you the $20 and sent you cards on your birthday, if you've got the grandparents who were always there for you, now as an adult, it's your chance to reciprocate that familial relationship back and help it grow and flourish.
But look, just like extended family has that choice behind it, so do our chosen family, our friends, the people that we bring around. And here's the thing, extended family and chosen family, they can be in for what we've heard called a reason, a season, or a lifetime. They can be in for a reason to maybe teach you a lesson, show you a part of yourself that you never knew existed. Or maybe they're in for a season for these couple of years while you're going through something and they're going through something similar, and you come together and then you drift apart, or they can be your ride or die homies for your life, right? So there are these different levels when it comes to this extended mixture of people that you involve in your life, and it's okay when it comes to a crossing point where maybe you have to let something go.
season, reason, and lifetime. Love that a clarifier for us. Sometimes we feel bad about relationships ending or distance growing in between, and just reminding yourself, look, everyone comes into your life for a season, a reason, or a lifetime can help you reorient and reframe on that. Some of our chosen family for us, and maybe for you as well, are folks that you work with, right? And we have one in particular person that's worked with us for a long time. And if you know anything about Kay and Shy, you know that nothing runs in our world without Megan Scott. So everybody join us in a big round of applause for Megan.
We consider Megan our third sister. In fact, as she spent more time with us, her hair has gotten blonder, and we love her deeply. Now, she is our work family. She works with us very closely. She is our right-hand woman in all things Kay and Shy, but we feel for her and care for her as if she is one of our own. And if you are in a workplace, then chances are you probably feel the same type of relationship as well. You have people in your work environment that matter so much to you, that you look out for and protect, that you step up for when you can. So we had to mention our work family because we've got one of the best ones out there.
Well, there's a reason that lots of people have the term work wife, work husband, work spouse, right? And if you don't have that, you probably had the experience as a kid where you maybe had people that you called aunt and uncle that weren't actually related to you. So we see this idea of this line being blurred between chosen and extended family through the generations. And it's something that as we examine the topic of family and we look at all the angles, it's an important one to bring forward, especially if you had a non-traditional childhood. You're likely looking to make those familial bonds in your adulthood. And that's okay, because sometimes it's easier to do without the shared trauma of childhood, of parenting experiences, and more. So chosen family and extended family can be something that's really beneficial for your life.
Now, the family pack is in the middle, and we've stood really close to it with the nuclear family. Mm-hmm. Then we took a step out with the extended family. Now we're going to take another step out and look at a community and our global family and what it looks like when we start to feel empathy and familial feelings for those people that we might not even know.
All right, we started tiny, we moved out further and further. Now let's just encompass the whole globe, the family of the human race, right? Because ultimately we are all one species, and there is a larger family out there for you, and that familial feeling can be ignited whether it's someone you've ever met or not.
Now, there are families in a community sense. Like, we have the most amazing community here in Reno, Nevada. And as Shyla and I began speaking and traveling all over the nation, we started to hear how amazing every community was, where people would step up and love on one another. And so this idea of a community of folks in your local environment who are all working together, not all, but mostly working together for the betterment of a community. And if you participate in that, it can be very fulfilling. It's much more tactical than participating on a global level, and might even look like volunteering for your local organizations.
Here's what we found out about community family. And in fact, it's true about any relationship, but particularly in your community family, is the more that you give, the more that you get. I know that's not revolutionary, but it can be easy to forget when we're talking about the entity of the community. This really came into sharp focus for us during the pandemic in 2020, when we're born and raised here in Reno, Nevada, right? We've been part of this community family our whole lives. And our businesses have been here for decades as well. And over those decades, we've given to every single organization and charity that's asked for a raffle prize, for a silent auction item, for a donation in kind for their raffle, for their event. And so it's something that we've always tried to give to our community. Well, in 2020, we needed to get from our community. And we went to our community in a myriad of ways and said, can you please help us? Our family, our literal family, needs help from our community family in order to save our business family from going under. And boy, did they step up.
Now, many of you remember the pandemic and what happened when things shut down, especially for what were deemed non-essential businesses. Now, Shyla and I, being restaurant owners here in Reno, were deemed non-essential. And overnight, we lost 85% of our incoming revenue. Now, that didn't mean an 85% drop in all of our expenses or in our employee burden. And we were not about to do a bunch of layoffs. And so we reached out to the community. We said, can you help us by supporting with buying buying gift cards or visiting a local squeeze-in, or maybe help us out by contributing. We hosted a Facebook Live telethon where we asked for all kinds of community members to submit stories, ideas, and talents, and they did. They showed up for us with videos so that we could show faces of our community to one another and raise money to feed hospital workers who were working overtime during the pandemic and keep our business afloat at the same time. So it was amazing that we had, you know, been in this position of being able to pour into our community for many years. And then when we really needed it, we found our localized community pouring back into us.
And you know what so many of them said was, you've donated to my kids' school. I've seen you at every charity event. We've seen your logo on all of the banners of the high school sports teams. We know that you contribute to this community family. And it was so heartening to be supported in that way. And then it happened again during the 2021 labor crisis, where the community really helped rally around us. We had grandmas coming out of retirement to pour coffee and folks and supporters saying, I'll take on a couple extra shifts just so I can come help out. And so it was this really beautiful collaboration around there. Now, as much as it sounds like we're celebrating our, we're so great in our community, there are so many in our community that do like tenfold what we do for our community. I think about KS Stanley and the TEDx organization. I think about Dr. BCW and all of the ways that she gives back in our community and beyond. I think about so many people, Debbie McCarthy, About Town Deb, who are out there actively promoting and supporting the Reno Sparks Northern Nevada community at large. And it's so heartening to know that our community, our family, is there for each other in good times and bad.
Now, the energy of family is found in the community and the localized community. It's also found on a state level. Hey, hey, go Nevada, right?
Although Battleborn?
Yeah, exactly, right? Battleborn is our cry. And we know that if you were from Las Vegas or from Reno, if you were born there, you can say Battleborn, and it means that you are from this great state. Now, if we take one step to the left or one step to the right, we get even bigger and we start to look at a country. Now, this type of energy that comes forward when someone feels like they're a part of that familial sense toward their country, this is nationalism and patriotism at play.
Which isn't always the healthiest for a country if it goes in the too populist direction, but is beneficial for us to continue to stay integrated and connected to each other. Remember, there's so much more we have in common than in difference with each other. And the more that we connect into that feeling at the state level, at the community level, at the national level, at the global level, the better we are all off as human beings. And I know, Kay, one of the main ways that we talk about being able to connect to our global family is through the emotion of empathy, being able to feel what others are feeling around the world, or at least put yourself into what you can try to their shoes, helps you understand, again, there's so much more that we have alike than different.
Now, unfortunately, this empathy generally gets sparked when tragedy arises and we see images of people from across the globe going into horrible circumstances, and suddenly we realize that that person could be my next door neighbor, that these people experiencing these challenges could be us. And suddenly we get this rise and this feel. And I think we see lots of people now starting to promote globalization and the love of man at large, instead of only being out for protecting those who are in your nation, your state, your community, or your nuclear family.
Right. So from one-on-one love to one-on-world love, everybody's your family as we look at this idea of family from every different angle. We're so glad that you've joined us here on the Infinite Energy Show to examine family.
All of our listeners here on the Infinite Energy Show, whether you follow us on Instagram, whether you're with us in person, in business, however you are connected to us, we consider you a part of our family. So please remember that this and all episodes come at you with the most love from your sisters,
Kay and Chai. Thanks, everybody.